So, you know, initially I was supporting myself. I'll be honest, when I found out that I had dyspraxia, it's not that I didn't believe it, but I didn't wish to allow that to sink in. So I didn't really do anything about it. I just thought, oh, okay, it's okay. But actually, the more productive and the more involved my career got, I then began to recognise that I do actually have dyspraxia.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Burnt Chef Journal, a hospitality-specific podcast dedicated to challenging mental health stigma and conversations designed to inspire a new, healthier, happier, and more sustainable hospitality profession. The Burnt Chef Project is proudly sponsored by Lamb Weston, a leading provider of innovative, high-quality potato products created for chefs to help operators thrive both today and tomorrow. Working carefully with sustainably minded farmers and growers, Lamb Weston provides potato solutions for every type of kitchen, from premium British chips and fries to potato shapes, wedges, and mash. To find out more, head to lambweston.eu or search your partner in potatoes.
Hello, everybody. My name's Julia Erdl, your Burnt Chef Ambassador, and I'm pleased to be guest hosting another mini podcast series for the Burnt Chef Project, supporting our hospitality sector by openly discussing mental health and providing enriching conversations to inspire and motivate you. Did you know that 4 out of 5 hospitality professionals report having experienced at least one mental health issue during their career? The Burnt Chef Project is a globally recognized not-for-profit social enterprise fully committed to making the hospitality profession healthier and more sustainable by focusing on people's well-being first. This is why it has never been more important to be talking about our mental health. For more information on this amazing project, go to theburntchefproject.com. Now, a little bit about me. I'm a professional chef, educator, speaker, self-discovery coach, writer, and radio personality. I've made it my purpose to guide midlife women to live a life of freedom and authenticity, taking them on a journey of self-discovery through the power of cooking and coaching. I learned firsthand that to make any real change in your life, you have to start from within. You can find me online at therecipeforlife.com. Now, our podcast topic this week is neurodiversity. Neurodiversity is a popular term that's used to describe differences in the way people's brains work. The idea being that there's no correct way for the brain to work. Instead, there is a wide range of ways that people perceive and respond to the world. And these differences are to be embraced and encouraged. And to talk about this wonderful topic, my guest this week is the fabulous British soprano Nadine Benjamin. Nadine Benjamin recently made her Royal Opera House debut in A New Dark Age and her Glyndebourne Festival Opera debut in the title role Louisa Miller. At English National Opera, Nadine's roles have included Clara for Porgy and Bess, Mimi and Musetta, La Bohème, and Desdemona, The Seven Deaths of Maria Callas. Other engagements include the title role, Aida, for Opera et Bouges, Nadia, the Icebreak Birmingham Opera Company, Amelia, Un Ballo in Maschera, with Opera Holland Park, and the title role Tosca for English Touring Opera. Nadine's concert appearances include Strauss, Four Last Songs, Barbara Knoxville, Summer of 1915 with the English Chamber Orchestra, and Vaughan Williams' Serenade to Music, and Tippett Child of Our Time with the London Philharmonic Orchestra. Nadine has recorded the role of Mrs. Waters in Dame Ethel Smith's opera, The Boatswain's Mate, for Retrospect Opera and Emergence, a selection of songs set to the poems of Emily Dickinson collaboration with Nicole Panizza. Further engagements include Elle, La Voix Humaine, Pegasus Opera, Tosca Opera Australia, Elvira Enani, Buxton International Festival, and Mimi La Boheme. Wow. Nadine was made an MBE in the 2021 Queen's Birthday Honours for her work as a soprano and the founder of Everybody Can, a mentoring concert series and professional development program for creatives. Nadine is currently doing an Executive Arts Innovation MBA with the Global Leaders Institute, where she is focused on the financial sustainability of artists over 35 to retirement. What can I say? That is the most amazing bio I've read out so far. I'm going to say just incredible, really. And welcome, Nadine.
Oh, bless you. That's very kind of you, Julia. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
No, the pleasure really is all mine. Now, obviously, knowing you and having witnessed you in your absolute glory, singing your heart out, I just honestly, and you know, I know Nadine very well. She is incredible. Now, Nadine, you live a very full, rich, multifaceted life.
I do.
Yes, you really do. And among all this, you are also neurodiverse.
Yes, quite severely, actually.
Wow. So I really want to dive into that. You know, when did you discover your neurodiversity?
You know, I was thinking about this the other day. I thought it was about 10 years ago, but I'm recognizing now it must be about 13 to 15 years ago that I found out. I was doing some one-to-one therapy. I'm a great believer in doing therapy and alternative ways of looking into how we can solve our paradigms or patterns that we wish to break. And I was sitting with the therapist and I, you know, we were having this conversation about me being able to do things that were really hard very easily. So things that were really hard, I could do them extremely easily. So for instance, if someone wished me to, I don't know, organize a conference with all the world leaders of the world, I would just go, okay, then, and I would go and set about doing it and I wouldn't even be fazed by it. But something as simple as kind of like brushing my teeth, I would find really hard. So the easy things I would find really hard. And she said, you know what, we've been discussing this for a few weeks now. I think you're possibly dyspraxic. And I said, really? And she said, I'd like you to go and get tested. So I went and had a test. And it turns out, yes, I was very dyspraxic.
Wow. So what's could you explain it just to the listeners a little bit more about dyspraxia? What is dyspraxia?
So dyspraxia can turn up in many ways. It can affect movement. It can affect how we think. It can affect different parts of the body and it can affect the development of the body. So one of the parts of my dyspraxia is my muscles didn't fully develop properly. But the most thing that I'm affected by is, I will just give you a little snapshot. So I'm severely affected by my executive functions. So your executive functions are central processes that are most intimately involved in giving organization and order to our actions and behaviors. They tap into the following abilities or skills. So volition, so awareness, initiative and motivation, planning, attention, impulse control and working memory. Goal-directed activity like starting, maintaining, switching, and stopping. Effective performance like monitoring, self-correcting, regulating emotional responses to challenges that arise, and managing pace. all of these elements interrelate to one another during a task. So having an insight into the components needed for effective organization of task and self can help to identify what can be targeted to improve self-management on a day-to-day basis. So I need to look at the issues which are breaking down, such as attention to the task, and build strategies that can then be devised to support this.
Yeah, wow. So when you found out, okay, so I mean, that's really interesting. And I love the way you like say, you know, the most basic task, it can be the most challenging thing for you. And yet, like, you could literally organize a UN meeting. Do you know what
I mean? Yeah.
And that's incredible. I think a lot of people would actually love to have that skill, to be honest. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I do absolutely recognize it now as my superpower. But before, I did find it very, very, what was the word? I found it very debilitating. So for me, it does show up as a disability because it can stop me from doing a number of things unless sometimes I have some support to help me with some of those things.
Right. Okay. So that's, you know, you've hit a really good point there. So, you know, because I was going to ask you, how do you navigate that one? How do you navigate the dyspraxia? And you mentioned support. And what can that look like?
So, you know, initially I was supporting myself. I'll be honest, when I found out that I had dyspraxia, it's not that I didn't believe it, but I didn't wish to allow that to sink in. So I didn't really do anything about it. I just thought, oh, okay, it's okay. But actually, the more productive and the more involved my career got, I then began to recognize that I do actually have dyspraxia. I also have Tourette's, where the body shakes and I can make noises sometimes. But that will happen when I'm at my most relaxed. It never actually happens when I'm on stage, thank goodness.
Wow. It's interesting you say that, actually, because I was going to say, because I suppose that when I thought about Tourette's, or, you know, having any kind of neurodiversity, I always sometimes, I don't know why, my assumption has been it shows up when you're stressed. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas you're actually saying it actually shows up when you're at your most relaxed.
Yes, yeah, that's when mine comes. I think because I've been able to hold my Tourette's, initially I couldn't for quite a few years. It would just happen and it was totally out of my control. But now I've got to a place where I can kind of hold it. So when I do relax, my body then goes into this explosion of Tourette's, which is quite interesting. Sorry, I've digressed now and I can't remember your initial question.
That's okay, that's all right. Yeah, so I was just kind of like, you know, curious as to how you are navigating and what you are doing. Because obviously we were talking about support, weren't we, for your dyspraxia.
Yes. So that's what I was saying. Initially, I didn't wish to kind of show up for myself in that because I didn't wish to believe it. But as I got, you know, more involved with my career and the pressures of my career demanded so much more of me, I then began to realize that, yes, I do have dyspraxia and I actually need to look at the recommendations that were made for me to actually deal with it. So one of the ways that, you know, I deal with it is, you know, by scheduling my time. I find that that's really, really important. I also have to ask for my needs because otherwise, I can't do what I need to do. So, for instance, at English National Opera, I was a Harvard artist at English National Opera. And in the second year, I had to tell them that I was dyspraxic. I was really, what's the word, panicking about that because I thought, oh, no, they're going to get rid of me. And that's what can happen when one has a disability or a neurodiversity of any kind, that you can perceive that once you say it, you feel like you're going to be outcast or somebody's going to look at you differently or judge you or think you're not capable. And I'm actually over capable, which is one of the things. Yeah. But what was so great is we had a casting director here called Misha Williams at the time, and she was instrumental actually in me developing at English National Opera. And she just looked at me and I told her, and she just said to me, whatever we can do to support you, we will do. And I just burst into tears because that wasn't the response I was expecting. So they started to put my music on green paper for me because seeing my music on a different color paper, especially green, for me, that's how it works for me, calms my nervous system down. So it means I'm more easily and readily able to take the music in. They allowed me to have my score for the first week of, always for the first week of rehearsals, because when we start a new job, I know my music and everything, but then I have to coordinate my movement with the music. Yeah. And that can be hyper difficult for me, just to make sure that that is running in tandem. So the ease, what makes that easy is if I've got my score with me with a pencil and I can just write down what my actions are, because when my hands are writing down what my actions are, it just goes into my brain really quickly. So that coordination of physical intelligence, you know, allows me for my brain and my body to be interacting at the same time, which allows the information to go into my unconscious.
Yeah.
And then the practice of that then makes it more conscious. So when I'm learning music, one of the ways that I have to learn music is by tapping my body. So for instance, a rhythm of 4-4, which is just 1, 2, 3, 4, I'm just tapping on my body. But another rhythm of, say, I don't know, 2 quavers, a rest and a crotchet. So that would be this. The rhythm, the more I get the rhythm of that music into my body, the more I can allow myself to be as free as I desire.
So yeah,
I'm not reliant on the music in any way. Those are just a few ways that I kind of navigate having dyspraxia.
Yeah, wow. I mean, that's really incredible, actually. And I think that's going to help a lot of people out there who are listening to this. So obviously, you know, a lot of our listeners tend to be people that work in the hospitality sector, not just, but obviously the Burnt Chef Project was set up to address mental health within the hospitality sector, and in particular with chefs. And, you know, hospitality is a very busy, hectic sector. And, you know, particularly if you work back end in the kitchen. So for someone who may have challenges and may not even know they are neurodiverse, what do you think they could do? How might they recognize this? And, you know, what would be the sort of advice that you would give them?
Well, I, you know, I love hospitality. I worked in the hospitality sector a lot, being an artist, and I used to be a waitress, and I also used to manage restaurants. So I absolutely understand what the job is and what we have to do. One of the things that, you know, if you feel that you are, say, getting your words mixed up or your numbers mixed up, or you feel like your brain is a bit slower than you'd like it to be, or sometimes too fast than you'd like it to be, just simply going to your local doctor and just saying to them, look, this is one of the things, or going to a therapist. So you can choose how you wish to do it, with through a medical route or through a therapeutic route, you know, but somewhere where you feel safe, or someone that you trust, where you can, who's got some knowledge of neurodiversity, that can then feed back to you whether you need to go and get tested or there's something else that could be looked at in order for you to have a better time. But one of the things that why testing is so important is, say, for instance, a chef uses knives. So one of the things that I used to do is cut my hands a lot. I used to cut my hands, you know, with a knife a lot, and they recommended me special knives to use to chop things up. They recommended me a special kettle so I don't burn myself, you know. So there are alternative instruments and tools that you can use to support yourself that would make your neurodiversity much easier.
If you're enjoying this week's episode, consider heading over to our website and supporting our ongoing work in destigmatizing mental illness and creating a healthier, happier, and more sustainable industry by purchasing some of our branded merchandise. We have a whole range of t-shirts, hoodies, chef's jackets, well-being journals, plus a whole host more available on Worldwide Dispatch. All funds raised from sales of these items go towards free to access e-learning content, as well as providing free support systems and help for those who may be experiencing difficulty with their mental health.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, I didn't even know that there was certain special equipment that you could get. I thought, you know, obviously if you had certain mobility issues, I know that you can get stuff out there, definitely. But I didn't even know that, you know, if you had a neurodiversity, that that was available to you. So that is absolutely incredible. I've learned something today. That is really incredible. And I know there'll be a lot of people out there listening that will be thinking, wow. One of the things, that points that you did make, which I thought was really interesting, was about the, I guess, the bias, the, I don't know if discrimination is the right word to use, but the assumptions that people make about you if you are neurodiverse, and you saying yourself that, you know, you were worried that when, if you came out with your neurodiversity, if you came out and said, you know, within the work and the role that you've got and the work you're doing, that you would be ostracized, that you would be, you know, you'd be fired, like you wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't be able to work, or that, you know, they wouldn't want you. And actually it was, you know, it was the complete opposite. But I can imagine that there is that fear in people. And it was just something that I, you know, I was just sort of curious to just go a little bit deeper in that as well, that, you know, if people out there are feeling like this, or, you know, not wanting to sort of speak up.
Absolutely. I think it's really important. And that is why I said that's why I told that story in particular, because our perception of how we're perceived, it can also not be true unless we go and talk about it with someone where we feel safe, because that safety is also important in neurodiversity, you know, where we feel safe, then we won't know. And I think also is about finding out your rights. So you could go to your local citizens advice bureau and find out, oh, what other services are there that I could avail of because of what's happening? And also, what are my rights at work? And what could I ask work for? And how could I ask them to support me? So it's always best to try and figure out beforehand, before you approach people, what could be available to you before you kind of go into those conversations. I think, you know, for us to be at our best, it's really important that people around us know what is going on so we can be fully supported. I mean, sometimes I can forget my words. Sometimes that's part of my executive functions. Sometimes I can be looking at someone and I can forget their name. And sometimes people laugh at me because I've known them 30 years, you know, and I have to say, what's your name? And they think I'm joking, but I'm really not. And they laugh. And actually, you know, at first, I found that really disheartening that they would laugh. And then as I got used to it and I saw that they laughed, I was so comfortable with myself. You know, I carry things in clear pouches as well now, because what used to happen is if I didn't have things in clear pouches, you know, one of the things is not being able to find things. So then I would take everything out and throw it out, and then everything would be in complete chaos. Now that everything's in clear pouches, I can see what's inside the pouch. I don't have to do that anymore. I just pick up the pouch, put it up to the light. The thing's not in there. I just put the pouch back in.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Do you know what? I think any women listening to this are probably going to start doing the same thing, neurodiverse or not. Have you seen the inside of a woman's handbag? I mean, like, it's just great chaos. My handbag is chaos.
So that's what I mean. I think it's about ultimately showing up fully as you. And showing up fully as myself means showing up with all my challenges and all the opportunities that I can avail of within myself, and being okay with those things. But I'm, as I said before, with myself, it took time. It wasn't an instant for me. I didn't find it comfortable. And I'm being totally transparent about that. It was uncomfortable. And it took me quite a few years before I realized that actually, oh my God, this neurodiversity is a thing. And sometimes if I don't have someone physically sitting beside me, helping me talk through something, it doesn't get done. So, you know, and I'm a leadership coach and an empowerment coach and a mentor as well. So, you know, I have to walk my talk and I have to be present in who I am in order to take people where they need to go.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what? You're right. It's something to be celebrated. It's something to actually empower yourself with, rather than feeling that you've drawn a short straw or that there's something wrong with you, isn't there? Because sometimes that can be a go-to for some people.
They absolutely
can sort of go down that, right? Yeah, yeah.
And it's about retraining your brain to recognize that your neurodiversity or disability is your superpower. Because of this, I get to think about life in this way instead. Because of this, I get to solve issues or problems that nobody even thought of. Because of this, I see patterns and behavioral patterns, and my intuition is just on fire because of my neurodiversity, you know. Yeah. And there are times where it feels overwhelming still now. So, for instance, traveling can be a thing for me. So traveling in a very packed train does not work for me. I have to get off and wait for a train that's not packed. I never take the tube, ever. You know, ever. It's down underground. That's overwhelming for me. So normally when you're neurodiverse, you are also hypersensitive, and I am hypersensitive. So not to noise, but to light and to too many people being around me at the same time. So that's how it affects me. So, you know, getting people to understand that you have to get off the train when they want to go somewhere with you can be quite a thing. But, you know, people who get to know you and understand you will recognize over time that this isn't a joke for you. This is your life. You know, and this is something that you adjust to. And sometimes it's okay. And sometimes it's not. We go out of the dark and the light all the time in life. And that's the part of the whole. And that's how we learn to cope.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You are spot on. And of course, people that love you, people that know you, people that get to know you, embrace that as you embrace yourself. And you know, we support you, and, you know, we support each other. And
exactly.
Right. And at the end of the day, and anyone who's not willing to do that or isn't so friendly towards you, then it's not really somewhere you'd want to be hanging out with anyway, to be honest.
Exactly.
Quite frankly. And so, I guess sometimes are there unavoidable situations? Because I sort of think about going back to hospitality and like with our chefs when they're in a kitchen, you know, if there are situations, because obviously like with kitchens, it's a really high intensity situation. What could be like a quick coping mechanism or just a quick hack or something like that to sort of help yourself if you found yourself in a situation which, you know, maybe is not really akin to where you'd like to be?
So I think it's really important that if you're in a situation and you already know you're neurodiverse, someone in the kitchen needs to also know that this is how it affects you. Someone also needs to know. That is for the general safety of your colleagues, but also the general safety of yourself. You know, that is a responsible and accountable thing to do. Okay. Hiding that in that situation, I don't think is a good idea. So that is one way to help yourself. The reason why I also say that is because if an episode or something does happen, you can gently just put a word in their ear and just say, I need 5 minutes. It's happening. Or I need 5 minutes. I'm not coping today. Or I need 5 minutes. I'm just having a moment of overwhelm. And so because you've already explained your circumstance to that person, you know, it's easier for you to leave the room. It's harder for you to leave the room if nobody knows where you're at.
Absolutely.
The other second hack that I always love is box breathing. You know, breathing in 4 through the nose, holding for 4, and then breathing out 4 through the nose again. And you can make that 5, 6, depending on what your breath capacity is. But, you know, just that simple holding, and then out again through the nose. It just allows the shoulders to drop, allows the brain to get some oxygen, and allows you to just to think differently. And if you did that 3 times, so box breathe like that for 3 times, and then make a decision. You might wish to just, if you're in the middle of service, but you know, there's not much orders in at that time, you know, taking just 2 minutes to get a breath of fresh air outside the back door. You know, see that there's something that needs tidying away, bring it to the back. You know, you don't have to make it visible sometimes, but it just might be just, you just need 5 minutes to get some air. I think it's really, we're in an environment now, we're in a world now that people understand that we need to sometimes get our needs met. And in a way that could be inconvenient to somebody else, but actually in order for us to do our jobs better, we need to ask for that support.
Yeah, definitely. And that's really, that is such a valuable point as well, is just being able to understand how to deal with it, how to deal with things quickly, a few little hacks there, and also asking for that support as well. There is always support out there, and there's always going to be somebody that you can go to confidently and speak to safely who would be able to help you.
Exactly.
So, of course, you go on stage. So, I mean, it is a bit like going into a hot, sweaty, busy kitchen, right? Mm. So you go on stage and you sing in front of sometimes thousands of people, Nadine. How do you do this? How do you mentally, physically get yourself in the zone, in your zone of genius, your zone of creativity to do that?
You know, well, as a coach, you know, I'm trained in lots of NLP and I'm trained in lots of high performance and lots of physical intelligence. So for me, taking those tools to help me get on stage, so to manage my nerves, one of the things that I do is I meditate beforehand. I also do the box breathing beforehand. I'm also quite quiet beforehand. And I write beforehand as well. And sometimes you might even see me juggle beforehand. So you might see me juggle in the between acts to keep my brain focused and active. I think we all have our own ways. Lots of people do physical movement. There's lots of people that go in and out of the gym. But for me, it's about how still can I be? And also being inside the story before I get to the stage. So don't get to the story when I get to the stage. Be inside the story before I get to the stage. That way I'm not in Nadine's world, I'm in the show's world.
Wow, that's incredible. I love that. I love that. I'm wondering, as I've started thinking as a chef, how can I put myself in that zone as well to be in that story? That's a really amazing point, actually. Oh, my gosh. And I'm very impressed that you have juggling skills as well.
Yes, I love a bit of a juggle. I tell you why I love juggling is because it helps my mind to focus. So, for instance, if I was feeling really nervous and, you know, and when we go into our nervous states, you know, they can be things like fight or flight or freeze. Yeah. You know, what happens then is we kind of have a slight out of body experience. Some people have huge out of body experiences where, you know, where they kind of leave their body. But to keep me in my body, to keep my body and my mind active and working together, juggling helps that for me.
Incredible. Incredible. You heard it first, people. Get yourself some juggling balls. This is the way to go.
I can only do three, though. But I'm only, okay. I can only do three. That's my limit.
I can't even do two. So I think you're a better person than me. You are incredible. And on that jolly note, Nadine, tell everybody where they can get in touch with you, see you, find you, please.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, I'm available all over the web. So NadineBenjamin.com is my website. At Nadine Benjamin Soprano is my Instagram. Nadine Benjamin is my Facebook. And Nadine Benjamin is my, just look for Nadine Benjamin. I'm there. Yeah, I'm everywhere. Absolutely. And if you're interested any more in the mentoring, everybodycan.com.
Wonderful. That is amazing. Nadine, thank you so much for being my guest this week. I applaud you and can't wait to see you next time in concert.
Thank you so much, Rilo. You're amazing. And I really appreciate what you're doing. I think this is a great podcast and I think it will help a lot and serve a lot of people. So thank you.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you, darling.